climb, top of the square, Cam Rayner.
Bailey, beautiful ball. Cameron running to goal. They'll kick another one. Gee, that's magnificent Brisbane play. Here he is, the man of the moment, Rayner, exploring from 45.
Got it to Danaher. Should goal. And he has.
Here comes Hipwood again. Crashes the pack. That's what you want to see out of your big tall forward. Rayner reeling around very unselfishly. Cameron, what about that for step? Have you ever seen anything like that? Unbelievable step and goal.
Welcome back to the Brisbane Lions fan cast with me, JB, and Patrick joins us again for a better week this week, less frustrating. I did do a little bit of a self-count on last week's episode, and the amount of times we use the word frustrating, frustrated, frustration, it was up there. And you mentioned last week that you ruined your weekend twice by going live to the game and then watching the replay. I had the opposite this week. I had the joy of heading along to the Gabba on Easter Thursday and then the even bigger joy of watching the replay a night or two later. Fantastic stuff. Welcome back.
Yeah, you're not even forgetting the joys of Easter as well. Got all of those chocolate eggs. Just a joyous weekend all around, I would say.
That's all right. Gave my my 8-month-old son his first Freddo frog, who enjoyed that until we took it away from him, and then he absolutely lost it. So that's enough for him for now.
I feel like I would have done the same thing, all things considered. And I'm talking as me as a 31-year-old.
Fair enough. Hey, good to be back on the winners list against one of the premiership favourites. We're now 2-2, find ourselves sitting in the 8, somewhat unbelievably. We've beaten Melbourne, we've beaten Collingwood, who are two of the fancy teams. We've won the two that we probably shouldn't have, lost the two that we probably shouldn't have, and can't win away from home is a sort of a summation of what's been going on for the Lions.
Yeah, with two away trips heading our way, so maybe we've just got it wrong. Maybe we've had the wool pulled over our eyes by Fagan, and he's just got the team primed and ready to beat the best teams and, you know, have a tumultuous season aside from that. But no, it was a much improved effort, I'd say. How was the Gabba?
I mean, it was a fantastic atmosphere. Lots of people there, obviously. I think it ended up being just under 34,000, packed house. Plenty of Collingwood support, as there always was. Plenty of Lions support, which was nice to see as well. And most importantly, the bloody light towers stayed on.
Yeah, I think as far as things go, kind of a bit of a false insecurity, but I think given what happened, it's sort of the thing that'll never happen again until it happens again. So,
and it will happen again.
When will that be?
It will happen again, that's for sure. I do kind of look forward to the next 2 weeks because, yeah, we haven't won away from home. We've got two away trips on the road, but against teams that we should beat just based on form, ladder position, trajectory, and where the teams sit in their premiership windows. But it does present a different sort of challenge, and I'm looking forward to seeing how we can come up against these two. The Giants are playing pretty good footy.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on kind of gather round coming in? All the games at Adelaide where we're dusted off at Adelaide Hills. Does the idea interest you?
Not so much. Living in Brisbane where magic round happens with the NRL, I can see why the AFL's given it a crack, and I probably won't know until it happens. But then again, is it going to make much difference to me watching it on TV? Probably not. I guess for the city of Adelaide, there'll be a bit of an atmosphere around the whole place. I'm much happier playing North Melbourne in Mount Martha than I am in Tasmania, because at least it's sort of a foreign landscape to both teams.
Yeah, I'm hoping it goes well, because it seems something that I would be kind of almost keen to sort of drive to next year, I think, and just take it in. My old man being from Adelaide, so if Sturt are playing a game and catch his old team. But I'm hoping it goes well.
Like I said, I won't know till it happens and what the general consensus of gather round is, but I can see why the AFL have given it a crack. I'm not overly sold on it just yet, but then again, I'm so far removed from it up in Brisbane that maybe that's it. Hey, great response from the team. Basically everything that we could have asked for, especially in that forward line. There are a lot of questions raised, especially over the two tall forwards, Danaher and Eric Hipwood. They more than answered critics over the week, especially Danaher. I thought his game was fantastic.
Yeah, I think there was a little bit of that kind of that day between selections being announced and then heading into the game. There was a lot of talk. I know you and I had words about that. Admittedly, I wasn't particularly happy with the selection. I thought it was all in all weak, but, you know, colour me proved wrong.
we weren't the only ones thinking that. After a disappointing performance the week before against the Dogs, we thought maybe Fagan would swing the axe a little bit more, make a bit more of a statement. And I guess the overwhelming thought was maybe take advantage of the ruck situation a little bit more by leaving the two rucks in instead of just wheeling in a fringe player like he tends to do. But yeah, I mean, we got the result, so it's hard to say that it was the wrong selection in the end.
True. I think just on his last press conference sort of before the game where he sort of mentioned it was sort of pick on Joey Danaher week, I kind of wish he would be able to see the fact that it's not the four goals or the no goals and four behinds. It's the effort, which sort of, even in the Melbourne game, was sort of barely there. He just kind of got a few goals by hook or by crook. This game had a far better effort, which is the thing that doesn't draw criticism and, you know, doesn't, you know, well, draws the praise because it's a non-negotiable to me. So I just wish Fagan would understand that the criticism isn't necessarily about the output or the goal kicking or the inaccuracy. It's the effort.
Yeah, and from the moment that first ball was bounced, Joe just had a look in his eye, whether it was attacking an aerial contest or even a ground ball. He made a beeline for it each and every time. Do you reckon the best way to sort of get that output from him is to play him as that second ruck, get him involved in the game a little bit more? Because he ended up with 20-odd touches as well to go with his two goals. He put his body on the line, and there was a moment there where he did grab his shoulder, and, you know, there was a collective sort of gasp from the crowd that we thought, oh, no, not again. This could be season over there. But, yeah, do you reckon to get the best out of him, we do need to play him further up the ground and get him involved in the contest from the middle?
I think if you look at him in terms of his best all-round performances, the only ones I can actually think about were the one just gone. Maybe this is because my brain is addled. The other one being his first game against Essendon in the pouring rain in his first season, where he did play as the sort of second ruck that night. And he was everywhere around the ground, and that was kind of indicative of showing a lot of the Essendon fans the kind of complete package in his game. So I think, to answer your question in a long way, yes. I think potentially playing him as that sort of second kind of chop-out ruck, it kind of brings him into the game. You and I spoke about Brad Johnson on 360 saying, you know, getting to the contest, if you literally force him to get to the contest by making him ruck, then he's able to impact it in a way that he feels, I suppose, suitable. So, yeah, I would say for the time being, let's do that.
Which does sort of, on a semi-permanent basis, just leave Fort out of the team, which, you know, it's got its pros and cons, obviously. If it means we get the best out of Joe Danaher, then sure, so be it. And it's good to have a very handy second ruckman floating around in the twos, ready to call upon should the worst happen to Big O. I thought Eric Hipwood was good as well. Didn't make as much impact on the stat sheet, but especially when it came to attacking aerial contests, didn't take a step back. He obviously got involved in some heavy collisions, one particularly with Billy Frampton, where Frampton came off second best.
I think Frampton probably deserved that one after, you know, a couple of the things.
So. Yeah.
I think with the two guys, it's, you know, their attack on the ball, when you roll up and you see Cam Rayner matching up on Maynard going head to head like the bull battering ram that he is, it probably just shows a little bit of a, you know, interesting a lead by example by Cam Rayner to sort of show the guys, hey, look, throw yourself at it. And that set a big tone, I think.
Well, speaking of Cam Rayner, I think a lot of people are on a similar vein of thought here, where we never want to see him in the back line again if we don't have to, because his performance was about as complete as anyone on the ground. We'll get to the votes later, but he was my best on, especially in that first quarter when it was a little bit to and fro. He was the one that stepped up, got us on the scoreboard, put his body on the line, and, as you said, sort of put the team on his shoulders and said, let's do this.
I think he's more than squared the ledger for goals that he's cost us playing in the half back line so far this season with his now five goals in the season. I reckon it's the sort of game where if someone like DeGoey or Dustin Martin has, he's being talked about as one of the competition's game breakers. And yeah, he really did take us with him in the first quarter, because there was definitely a moment, I think scores were probably about, I want to say it was 34-20 to Collingwood, and they were kicking for goal to double our score. And then that was sort of the last sort of action before we went on the run of 10 goals. So
I think generally the forward six were best on in all of the lines. I mean, the back six were handy as useful. I thought the midfield was still a little bit below par. I thought as a whole, they all sort of chipped in and did their bit, but they still got done in clearances and the contested possessions, they were a little bit up. But generally speaking, I thought they were our weakest line.
Yeah, I think when you're dealing with a ruck ascendancy like that, you're hoping that I'd probably say the inside mids probably underperformed a little bit. I thought the outside, the wingers were really good, particularly with the output that Collingwood have had from their wingers. Very little of Sidebottom and McCreary. I don't know if McCreary actually plays as a winger, but he tends to be there quite a lot anyway. But I thought Pryor and Wilmot did a really good job on both of them. But the inside mids, yeah, just a little bit of that cohesion and a little bit of disjointedness. Although there were times when we were putting Zorko in there to try and sort of, you know, tighten up with a bit more pressure. So still things kind of working. And I guess when you throw someone like Dunkley in that doesn't know with the... Is it the second year for the new mids coach?
Second or third? Not 100% sure off the top of my head.
Because I think it also probably just is a bit odd to sort of know you're going to win the hitouts. I feel like that'd be a bit of a weird feeling playing.
Yeah, 100%. We spoke about three players last week, McCarthy, Bailey, and McCluggage. I thought McCarthy and Bailey lifted their output a little bit. McCarthy more so. Bailey was a little bit better, still sort of turned it over a little bit and made some questionable decisions. But I still thought McCluggage was still well below his best. So I'm not really sure what's going on with him at the moment.
Yeah, McCluggage is an interesting one because I said last week that he looked like he'd lost a yard of pace, but he's getting hands to the ball. He's just, I don't know, he seems to have lost confidence in his left foot disposal, which is normally pretty reliable. And just decision-making seems a bit odd. Bailey needs to learn how to fend properly because he's leaving his hand there to be grabbed. But I don't know, you do you, but not for me. And I thought McCarthy's attack on the contest in the first quarter was really impressive. So I think Charlie Cameron mentioned it after the game in his interview how he and Link McCarthy sort of just decided to, you know, win ground ball in the forward half. So that was a good response. Segue to Charlie there with his six goals.
I mean, in a lot of ways, it was a very typical Brisbane game from sort of last year or the year before. Like, it suited our natural game style. Attack the ball and then run back, especially someone like Charlie Cameron, who when he pushes up the ground and then runs back to goal, that's when he's playing his best footy, and it showed when he puts through six goals.
Yeah, and I think it was one interesting... I you know, noticed in the first half, I don't know if they're listening, but they put body on Dacos a lot. There was a time Zorko was giving it to him. He gave away free kicks. I still thought Dacos was good. But it wasn't quite as, let's say, as he didn't have his clamp on the game the same way he has in other games this season. So whether that's starving them of the ball, I know he ended with a million disposals.
38 and two goals too. It's a good game in anyone's book, really. But at the ground, he went a little bit more unnoticed than normal. And I was keeping an eye out for him because the constant fellating of this kid from the media is just ridiculous. Like, I get it. He's a generational talent, and his ball use is pretty exquisite, to be fair. But yeah, he went a little bit unnoticed on the ground. It wasn't until I left and saw he had 38 touches, and then went back and watched the game. I was like, yeah, he was, especially in that third quarter when he had 16 of the things. He was Collingwood's best on by a long way.
Yeah, of course. But I think when you starve them of the ball, and we kicked, was it 10 straight?
Yeah.
I think, you know, across probably the end of the first quarter through to the third quarter, but. Yeah, goodness me, that took his output, because I think he'd had 12 and then he had maybe 15 for the half.
Yeah.
So three disposals in the second quarter. That's not, don't quote me on that, but that's a rough estimate. Yeah, it seemed a good way to deal with him, and that could be a blueprint for other teams. Seeing Zorko pestered up on him, it's like, I'm happy for that to happen now that he's not the captain.
Yeah, for sure.
So, but, you know, to see Dacos give away free kicks, miss probably easier shots on goal than he scored. And he's shown everyone that he's a massive wuss with a big old dive.
Yeah, that last quarter when he took that dive when Ashcroft laid a fingernail on him, he landed from that fingernail, took a step, maybe even a step and a half, and then decided, you know what, I might throw myself forward here. The crowd didn't take too kindly to that one.
I didn't take too kindly of it either. But the third quarter proved a little bit more of a challenge. I think had the... the Magpies been a bit more accurate, then we might have been in a little bit of trouble. But to me, there was only really a 10 to 15 minute period where we probably lost control of the game. And I don't think you can really control a game for the full four quarters. You can have a four quarter performance, but there's always going to be times where momentum, particularly when you're playing against the premiership favorite at this point in time. What can you say about the overall performance? Anything else stand out to you?
Not a huge amount. I mean, Harris is quietly going about his business, and I would almost say back to that 2019-2020 form at the moment. And I don't know whether that's got anything to do with Marcus Adams being out of the picture and he can go back to playing that role that he was used to playing before Marcus Adams entered the fray, or whether it's just he's got a bit more confidence back in his body. But he's playing fantastic footy. Brandon Starcevic, I could watch him play footy all day, every day. And Jack Payne is coming along in leaps and bounds, and his ball use was probably his biggest question mark over the last couple of years, is getting better each week as well. Like, I'm trusting him with the ball now a bit more.
I think that's kind of the nature of the game a little bit, because there were times probably in the last, let's say pre-2019, where we had quite good ball users, and then the ball would always fall to the less good ball users to have to exit the back half. And that's the nature of the beast when you've got like, you know, against the Bulldogs, I saw Harris Andrews just shift it and then kick off one step on his left, like 55 meters straight to a dude. And I was like, far out, that's bullshit. But so you might tend to find that they're happier with Payne having the ball rather than, you know, Coleman, Andrews, whoever else is there. I mean, if I was them, I'd probably be letting Dara have the ball. But Dara or Payne, they're probably going to get a lot of the exits out of defensive 50.
He still wasn't fantastic, Dara, but he played a much better game, took a couple of intercept marks, played his role when he had to, and yeah, he was obviously much better than he was the week before, which was a really poor game.
Workmanlike, I think. And yeah, he sort of didn't stick out like a sore thumb or anything. There weren't too many decisions against him. So
one thing I did notice was McKenna probably was a little bit down, especially ball use wise. And we looked to dish it off to him just simply because he was running past when we really didn't need to, especially when he was caught on the opposite foot as well. And he tried to like go back inside or chuck it on the left or fashion a kick where he was out of position. And half the time, Oscar McInerney, whoever's dished the ball off to him, could have just dumped that ball down the line. But they've opted for McKenna because, I mean, that's the role he plays, running by, hopefully take a bounce, but probably just didn't use him the best that we could have as well. So his ball use was off, but I don't think we helped him either.
No, I agree. And I must say, I'm all for watching the Big O just like smash drop punts as far as he can. So more of that, because he can get deep entries from literally anywhere on the field somehow. So, you know, far be it from me to not want that.
If you've got a mate that loves the Lions, tell them to get the podcast into their ear hole.
The 666 infringements, I don't think I've ever seen that, especially not three times in one game. It's the first time it's happened this season to any team, let alone the warning and then two in a row, like actual penalties. I think we only made use of it the first time, but it certainly helped our cause.
I think when you see a team, you know, get the warning in the second quarter, you're kind of licking your lips a little bit. Three times in a row? Like, how?
I mean, I wonder if that comes down to the lack of ruck, and then everyone's just sort of out of position that little bit. Like, McStay's in the ruck, or Ash Johnson's in the ruck, and then, oh no, we've got to fill a hole here, and then by the time it's all done, they're caught out, and then we get a free kick.
Could it be the old fable that Collingwood fans only have five teeth and only know to count to five?
It could be. It bloody well. It bloody well could be.
They'd be looking for that dental plan, I guess. Anything more to say? Because I think it's amazing. We seem to have a lot to say when the team aren't kind of, you know, have had a poor performance. And I know I just asked you, but for me, the only thing I kind of noticed as well was we were very selfless, almost in an overcorrective sense. But I think there was times where one of the three of Cameron, Danaher and Hipwood all passed to one another for shots on goal, which after some of the vision that we'd seen during the week, it was pretty satisfying. It's good. It's good for the team. And there were times where I think they probably tried to pass one too many just across the board. But, you know, you'd rather an overcorrection than a stubborn disregard for any sort of criticism. So
yeah, and I think if we can find that balance, especially moving forward, then it'll put us in good stead. One thing, just looking at, like, I don't want to go too far ahead here, but I have anyway. The fixture is pretty kind to us over the, like, leading up into the bye. In fact, the hardest one we've got is Carlton at Marvel, I think, in a couple of weeks' time. But other than that, we've got North, GWS, Frio at home, Essendon at home as well, the Suns also at the Gabba, Adelaide down at Adelaide Oval. So that takes us to round 11. We should be winning 80 to 90% of those matches. The Carlton one's obviously the biggest one, depending on form and, you know, barring injuries to any teams, how we go over the next 5-6 weeks. But we've set ourselves up okay.
I think if you can go into the bye 9-2, that will really show what the team's made of. And that really will bring them into contention from all parties, I think. I'd be looking at just winning the games. The players need to be bringing that effort like they did. I'm sick to death of the team sort of playing the game based on the opponent. So they'll only sort of just try and beat them, you know, rather than play their game. So we'll see how that goes. I think the next two are a big potential to see whether that changes. And I hope they do perform well. It's the performance rather than, I know I literally just said win, yeah, but you know, what are they doing to me?
Yeah, I get it. And like I said at the start of the show, I think it'll be a different but a very good test for us over the next couple of weeks. Like I said, GWS, they're not playing bad footy. They got done by Essendon today, who almost kicked themselves out of it. But they've been in it for most of the games they've been playing. Obviously, they beat Adelaide. They fell short to West Coast.
They had the umpire Carlton.
That's right.
Situation.
Yes. Yeah. So they pushed Carlton right to the end there, who are undefeated technically, I suppose, at this point in time. So that'll be a tough game. North probably a little bit easier on. Is there room to, over the next couple of weeks, especially with 2 weeks of travel, to a la a Richmond or an Essendon, who we saw use Dyson Heppler as the sub, to sort of manage a Zorko?
Possibly. It sort of depends. I mean, I guess I would put Zorko in a slightly different realm of fitness, sort of, to Heppel and to Jack and Trent Cotchin. It just seems like he's younger than them. He feels fitter. And his impact has been kind of there, maybe not as consistently as sort of on the ball all the time, but I'd say probably no. I think you're sort of playing your best team through till the bye, and then you look at managing in the second half of the season, which isn't to say that they could try some things.
That's where it gets tough after the bye, obviously. Well, I mean, actually, our first game after the bye is Hawthorn down at the MCG, but it obviously means we've got some tougher games on the other side of the bye as well. Sydney, St Kilda, who, if they're playing anything like they are at the moment down the line, they're going to be a tough opposition, especially at Marvel. Richmond, that's a home game, thankfully. And then we play Melbourne again at the MCG. I'm obviously looking way too far ahead at this point in time.
Yeah, I think it's interesting when you look at fixtures and when they come. You know, I think last season, it might even have been the Easter Thursday against Collingwood, where we sort of scraped through, and it didn't seem like such a great result last season, but in the context of the season, it was handy points.
Yeah.
So it could be the situation where Essendon and St Kilda have kind of punched themselves out by the sort of back half of the season anyway, fingers crossed.
And you want those tougher games in the back half of the season to sort of get you primed for finals as well. If you can bank your wins in the first half of the season and sort of just fine-tune in the back half and then come up against tougher opponents by the time September rolls around, then I think you get put yourself in a good position to really attack September in firing form.
Get in touch anytime. Shoot us an email at blfancast@gmail.com or join the Discord.
Should we give our votes?
Yeah, let's do it.
Rayner for me, 3 votes. Obviously, 4 goals, best part of 20 touches. Impacted the contest, especially in that first quarter when we really needed someone to stand up and say, hey, this is what we need today. He was there to do it.
His second goal was as good as I've seen of that kind of a goal.
Yeah.
It was almost sort of Ackermanis-esque, that one against Carlton back in the day. I know that was on the wrong side and, you know, different, but to burst through and kick from outside 50 metres was awesome.
Like, that's the sort of stuff you see from Petrarca semi-regularly. So that's, if we can get that from him week in, week out, like I said, don't move him down back ever again. That's his position. That's his natural game. Leave him there and let him break games open. Chucky, 6 goals, 2 votes. enough said. And I'm going to give Danaher the one simply for the response from last week. Attacking the ball, 20-odd touches, 2 goals. It was about a completed performance from Joe, and response points, really. I mean, I could have given it to Dacos, could have given it to Ashcroft as well, who obviously topped our possessions and played a fairly decent game, but nah, Joe for the response.
Fair enough, yeah.
Any wavering differences in your votes there?
I had 3 for Rayner, 2 for Cameron, and 1 big old dive point for Dacos, so.
And he thoroughly deserved, and I'm sure by the time the Brownlow rolls around, his name probably will get read out, to be fair.
Yeah, but you know, who really cares?
A lot of the commentary around the game was about the commentary itself following and BT's sort of willing Collingwood over the line, especially when their best part of 40 points down. It's like, oh, you know, comeback's on here if they can just squeeze 2 goals before three-quarter time and things of that nature. I obviously didn't hear it at the game, thankfully, so I was on the lookout for it when I did watch the replay. I didn't think it was as bad as it was made out to be, but it was definitely there.
I think the thing is, you know, you and I have spoken about this in the past, and that broadcast is generally looking at a more Victorian audience than not. So there would probably be people from that perspective, you know, hoping for that. But the thing for me is just Daisy Pierce this season seems to be waffling way more than she used to. She'll say something good, but she says it in so many words and really almost like yelling it from the sideline. And it's just like, just chill a little bit. I know you're assistant coach at Geelong now, but just fewer words. Take a leaf out of Abby Holmes.
Word economy is what we call it in the radio industry. But I mean, I like listening to Daisy Pierce. I think she knows her stuff, and obviously there's been a lot of talk around her role in Channel 7 conflicting with her game day role for Geelong as well.
Mountain out of a molehill, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, it will be interesting to see if any other clubs sort of take the same stance moving forward.
I'd do it. I wouldn't have her in the room. Like, why would you?
No, I agree with you as well. So,
but as far as the broadcasts go, you know, BT, Brayshaw, Richardson, like BT's fine on the radio, but I don't know what it is about prime time that just, it just neuters him.
I mean, there's an element of, you know, you've got to keep people watching and listening, so you've sort of almost got to root for the comeback to give people a sense of hope and not turn off the TV as well. But, yeah, it's, as far as a commentary lineup goes, I could probably ask for a better one.
The thing that I've been finding frustrating this season is trying to listen to SEN through the app and then just having my KO just buffer and screw up the sync every time I do it. Just a question to anyone who, you know, does go to the games and does listen to radio. Any tips? Because I'm always dealing with a long delay. So any help would be, do I need to get myself an actual radio?
Very possibly. There was a gentleman sitting behind me that had a full-blown wireless with the antenna pulled like way out, and he seemed to be enjoying it, so maybe there is something to be said for that.
But is there a delay on that, or is it because you're going digitally through the app? There's got to be a way, so someone help me out.
Yeah, especially if you're in a stadium where a lot of people are jamming the network, then perhaps it is making it a little bit slower.
Food for thought.
Like the show, make sure to follow and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform.
Heading into next week, eh?
Heading into next week, North Melbourne, Adelaide Hills, they have been literally up and down, won their first two, lost their second two. Looked like Nick Larkey took a bit of a hit on the weekend. He looked pretty sore for three quarters of that game. The key matchup is going to be Cam Zoha, who I really rate as a footballer. He had a fantastic game. I don't know that we've got a suitable matchup for him, really.
They could be dangerous out of the middle with Goldstein, Zoha, and Luke Davis-Uniacke. So, you know that I've been quite a fan of LDU for a few years.
Yeah,
probably since a year after he got drafted.
He's he's had a great season so far. I mean, apart from LDU and Jai Simkin and Zoha, when he does roll into there, the midfield is fairly thin for those guys. Cunnington obviously has been there for a while, but he was a sub on the weekend. So it'll be an interesting game, but I think, I mean, we should win this game.
Yeah, well, I think given Griffin Logue will be back, it's interesting mentioning Griffin Logue last week and then he went and got suspended to kind of draw attention to the fact that he was at North Melbourne, just to kind of rub it in my face. Other McKay, will he be there?
Who knows? It's a foot thing, so honestly, it's a genuine 50-50. I wouldn't mind if he wasn't.
All things considered, given, you know, Kerno and McKay kicking 10 goals, hopefully our tools can be as effective if they're in the same conditions. I don't know.
Well, that's it. I mean, the game on Thursday night, while it was a great response, that should be the baseline. That shouldn't just be a flash in the pan one-off. All right, hey, guys, we can still play footy, so lay off us again. I think that should be... If they can do that each and every week, then the criticism will never come.
Yeah, I mean, you think back to like Hawthorn's premiership teams and our premiership teams, they used to bully these teams. And I'd love to see us go in there and just really just show North Melbourne who the best team in the league should be. And it should be us. It isn't, but it should be.
Yeah, we should win this match. I'm hoping we can walk away with at least a 5-6 goal win. That should be par, if I'm honest. Are you making any changes to the 22 that's just beaten flag favourites?
Probably not. I'd like to see Answorth on as the tack sub. I think he's a bit more versatile than Dev. I've got a bit of a thing. I like Dev and Pryor playing in the same team because they seem to, like, through the power of friendship, really, like, elevate each other's games. But other than maybe seeing Rich come back in for McKenna, just given he was a bit down, that's something that could happen, not something I would necessarily do. So for me, unchanged with Answorth as the tactical sub.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't change it either, but I think they will bring Daniel Rich back, and I don't know if it's going to be a case of last in, first out, so maybe that means Pryor gets dropped and then just shuffle around those sort of wing roles a little bit. But I do have a feeling that Fags will bring Rich back. I'm just not sure at whose expense at this point. It could be McKenna. I wouldn't mind that.
You have been riding him since the preseason.
Well,
I'm just teasing.
I had, but then he turned me around in those first couple of matches. So, but yeah, he did not have an off week, but that doesn't mean that this week will be any different or any better or any worse. So
I do like his willingness to sort of cause a bit of issue and sort of say, well, are you really going to fight me? I'm Irish.
Yeah. Yep. Especially when you've got Darragh Joyce, the other Irishman there, not too far away to back him up and get ready to glass whoever's giving him a go.
Make sure you follow us on socials. Just search for BL Fancast.
There's so much to say when we lose a game, but when you win, it's like, well done. Keep doing that.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose you look at just the players for Collingwood who seemed down on their sort of usual performances. You know, McCreary was sort of nowhere. Pendlebury, you know, down, side bottom down. You know, Bobby Hill put himself around a bit.
He had a good first half and then sort of faded. Jamie Elliott missed goals that he would normally kick 8 times out of 10. Obviously their inaccuracy cost them a lot. If they, especially across that second and third quarter when we kicked that 10 in a row, if they had have managed to snake one or two or three of those shots that they took, then it keeps them in the game and it's a different game leading into the last quarter, especially a team like Collingwood who thrive on clawing back leads and pinching a close one.
I think that kind of can be said for the elevated level of maturity that we showed in that game, to be able to kind of keep them at that arm's length. So, and good to kick 100 points.
Yep, first time this season that we've managed to do it. Still that asterisk next to the Melbourne game, which we would have got had the electricity not gone out. So good to get that, good to get some percentage points back. And weirdly enough, we find ourselves sitting in the eight, which I feel like a bit of an imposter at the moment. But as I said, over the next sort of 7-8 weeks, I think we should fully entrench ourselves closer to the top four.
Just to rub salt in the wound, Sandy Roberts the whole night called me Big Jeff Brown. Jeff, did he? Oh no.
All right, last week it was the Hobbit, as we called him, James Hawksley, as our obscure player of the week. You've got a new one for us this week. Who's your obscure player that you bring to the show?
I've gone for Ben Fixter.
Excuse me?
Look, he's probably so obscure that I don't even remember him other than by name, and that I think he wore number 4.
It is.
And he did.
Yep. Wow. This is... I'd like to pride myself on being able to remember some genuine potatoes that have played for the Lions, but Ben Fixter, I'm drawing a blank.
So, interestingly, he got drafted by Sydney and then played 4 seasons at Sydney and was delisted just before they won a premiership. He had a year off, and then we signed him in the rookie draft in 2006. Would he have made Sydney possibly win 2 in a row? Who knows? He was good enough to play all of about 27 games. I think he was a small forward, not a great disposal winner. He had a very strange look
I am just looking at him now. He's got a bit of a Adam Huskis about him.
That mixed with, like, sort of, he's got, there's a photo here where he almost looks a bit like Clark Keating from the 2003 grand final with that sort of weird mod haircut.
Yep.
Bit of Stephen Bradbury in there. Weird.
If I type Ben Fixter into Google Images, he had a footy card.
What?
Yeah, he had a footy card. An AFL Supreme Select 07 AFL footy card. It's on sale right now on eBay for $266 US if you fancy it.
I love that. US dollars. Who the hell is selling Aussie Rules? Aussie Rules card. I found it. A bit overpriced for mine.
I'm genuinely surprised that he made it onto a footy card.
Tell you what, if you want to see some funny stuff, click on it and look at some of the suggested ones. The Shermanator.
Oh, there he is.
$3.99 Australian dollars.
Lovely. Oh, there's a Jason Rowe card.
Okay, well, let's not get onto this again. We already gave a massive, massive level of spoilers last week. So Ben Fixter had blonde hair in the kind of dyed sense and didn't make an impact.
No.
But may have cost Sydney a flag.
We'll never know. Yeah, I can't find a single thing about Ben Fixter. He just faded into anonymity. Like, I hope he's well. That's all I can say at this point in time. I hope he's well.
I hope he's well. Well, his Wikipedia page says that he is 41, so it doesn't have a date of death listed, so we can assume he's doing all right.
It's good, or that no one cares enough to update his Wikipedia page. At the end of the day, the man's got a footy card and a Wikipedia page. It's more than I can ever say for myself, so well done, Ben Fixter.
I'll make you one, and I'll make you the other one.
If you've got a mate that loves the Lions, tell them to get the podcast into their ear hole.
Anything else to say?
Yeah, I do want to touch on, I guess, Fags' coaching. I thought Fags coached really well on Thursday night as well. I think he just simply outcoached Craig McRae. I do think, as I said, it suited our natural game style. I think we attacked the attacking flair a little bit more this week, and we sort of dialed back that overly defensive game plan. We just sort of found that groove a little bit more. Probably still take some tinkering, but I thought, in terms of exploiting Collingwood's weaknesses, I thought Fags did a really good job.
You think there's an element of us performing, let's say, our more natural game or better when we're playing teams that are willing to kind of push onto us rather than kind of... Yeah, it happens more with soccer where you'll have like a good team play a pretty crap team and the crap team will sort of just sit at the back and put everyone in front of the goal.
Yeah.
And it can be difficult to break down. Do you think that could be a thing with us where if there sort of is a more competitive team that's willing to try and, you know, play through us, that we tend to react better to that?
I think so. Also, it was our big downfall as well. And we saw that when, you know, we played a team like Geelong where our attacking flair just suited them right down to the ground and they blew us off the park. So I think horses for courses. But yeah, I think definitely when we're playing a team like Collingwood, suited us immeasurably.
You mentioned horses for courses. Whilst not quite a horse step, the goose step by Charlie Cameron, that's vintage Charlie.
Yeah. I think obviously BT lost his marbles over it. And have you ever seen a step like that? I mean, yes, Brian, we have. Charlie does it semi-regularly and small forwards for many years have done that. Just watch any Cyril Rioli highlights over the last 20 years. But yeah, that was vintage Charlie. He had one of the great games. He's snapping on his left. Country Roads just blaring each time, getting more and more reaction from the crowd. I did see the next day on Reddit, someone posted in the Lions subreddit, who's a Collingwood supporter, going like, hey, good game last night. One question though, what's the deal with Country Roads playing all the time? Don't you guys just hate it? And all the Lions supporters are like, nah, because it means good. It's like Pavlovian training. If you hear that, it means good. And I guess the opposite for this person, who anytime he would have heard it, it means that we've just piled on a goal. So no wonder he was having a hard time dealing with a bit of John Denver in the stands.
John Denver's a strange looking fella.
He is?
He's got some really garish record covers that you'll see at just about any record fair you'd ever go to. They're sort of really big, focused on his face stuff. One thing I might say, not the biggest fan of the players singing along to the songs, but I'm just a bit of a killjoy, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind it. But once again, it means that they're kicking goals. So maybe I'm just sing meme good.
Yeah, fair. I'm sort of the traditionalist in me gets irked by that, so yeah. Takes it away from the crowd to me.
All right, well, what about you? Any final thoughts, not just about the game on Thursday night, but, you know, North or GWS or any of the games moving forward? Any other changes you'd like to see about the game plan, the team, that sort of stuff?
Not too much going into it. Just, you know, let that be a benchmark going forward, please. And if anyone has any tips about that radio thing, let me know.
It's a little bit like that because obviously we've been down, up, down, up. If we can just find some consistency, and especially in that up consistency, that's all we really want. If that base level of effort is there that we saw, we've seen it the last 3 weeks, but if we can combine that with, you know, a balanced game style that allows some attacking flair with some solid defensive structure, as well as the effort and foot skills, and there's definitely some tidying up that needs to be done with our finishing and foot skills, and those players that are still a little bit off the pace, then we'll be in with a great shot. The other thing that we have now got going is our very own Discord server. So you can get in touch at any time on any of the socials. Just search for BL Fancast on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Reddit, or at blfancast@gmail.com. But the links to our Discord server will be there as well. So you can jump in and have a chat with us, ask any questions that you want answered, not just in real time, but on the show as well. Give you guys the chance to be involved as another fan. You've gone to work to set that up. I'm still wrapping my head around it a little bit.
Full disclosure, I have no idea how running a Discord works, so there's a good chance this could be absolutely overrun with madness, but I think sometimes you have to embrace that. But yeah, if you want to ask a question, you think something's, you know, interesting talking point, I think it'd be a good idea to bring part of that into part of the show. I don't think there's probably going to be too many questions, but if it is certain stuff like, why is Eli Smith not playing? He doesn't play for the club anymore. That's the answer. So
the questions will be more about, I guess, Jared Lyons now, who, if we do have a look at the undefeated twos, who absolutely blew Collingwood off the park on Thursday as well. JL keeps racking the numbers up. Another 37 and a couple of goals. So the questions will start being asked about him. And of course, Rhys Matheson, as they are each and every year. Noah Answorth had a great game in the twos as well. So they're just going to keep pushing their case. And I do think that at some point, Jared Lyons will be in our 22. I'm just not sure under what circumstances. While it's great to have midfield depth, it does mean that players, and this has already been spoken about with the likes of Dev Robertson, that West Coast are going to come sniffing around again at the end of the year. If he's not getting regular games, then why wouldn't he go back home and be a regular 22 for West Coast? And surely Rhys Matheson is going to go, hey, let me go play somewhere else because I'm too good to be playing twos and things of that nature.
Could you see him rekindling his childhood weird pre-draft boat photo shoot with Darcy Parrish?
Yeah, I don't think he would be completely out of place in that Essendon 22, although they did just get in Will Setterfield, who would be playing a similar type of role and is playing half-decent footy, so he might find himself in a similar boat there. I mean, there's definitely teams that would have him in a heartbeat that he would play first 22 each and every week. It just remains to be seen whether people want him, whether we want him, whether he gets more games, whether we get another injury and he gets another string of games.
Do you think if a team takes Matho, they'll pay his petrol to get his muscle car to wherever he needs to go? All $700 worth of fuel.
Well, that just about wraps it up for another week on the Brisbane Lions Fancast. Don't forget to get in touch if you've got any questions, any comment, any feedback, anything you just want to get off your chest. Like I said, hit the socials, hit the email, and join the Discord server. We'll be back next week after our game against North Melbourne at Mount Martha for Gather Round. I think that's shaping up to be an IRL podcast. Both of us in the same place.
Yeah, that's right. You're going to be down in Victoria for some sort of matrimony.
Yes. So I'll be down there. So we'll try and make the time to catch up and do this thing together and see how we go.
Beautiful. Can't wait.
But I do want to leave you on one thing. You little beauty!